telling these tears, go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flames. Freedom, freedom, I can't move. Freedom, cut me loose.
What is up, Wisconsin? Happy Friday, everyone. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Boy, folks, do we have a special show for you today. Not only are we going to be joined by actor, beloved actor Sean Astin of Goonies, Rudy, Lord of the Rings, and Stranger Things fame. I'm so humbled and excited to start this show with an incredibly special guest to celebrate Joe Biden's dedication of the Springfield 1908 Race Riot National Monument today. Of course, Springfield, Illinois, being President Lincoln's hometown, happy to welcome Council on Environmental Quality Chairwoman Brenda Mallory. Chairwoman, thank you so much for making time for us today. Welcome.
Absolutely, Maggie. It's such an honor to be here.
Well, thank you so much. Tell folks, what is the dedication? What is this national monument about? I'm sure there are many people that aren't aware of the 1908 Springfield Race Riot.
Absolutely. I think, well, just start from the beginning. The president and vice president have been so focused since the beginning of the administration to making sure that we are telling the full story of this nation's history, the complex parts, the pleasant parts, the unpleasant parts, and on the theory that it helps us move forward towards healing and reconciliation and better relations. And the Springfield 1908 race riot is one of those examples of a horrific event. The situation where a white mob attacked a Black community because there were two individuals who had been in jail, who were in jail for, again, probably false charges, but in jail, and the sheriff, trying to avoid there being any violence, snuck them out of town. And the white mob was outraged by this, and as a result, burned down the town, lynched several of the residents, looted the stores. And so a really horrific event that occurred over 2 years, 116 years ago, over 2 days, 116 years ago. And from that, though, it was kind of a last straw that helped galvanize a collection of, you know, good-meaning people, good people of goodwill, of all races, to come together and create the National Association of the Advancement of Colored People. And so that organization, as you know, just has gone on in history and done tremendous things to advance civil rights. So this was just an opportunity to kind of recognize both the event and use it to tell other stories that are related. So in designating the monument, we were talking about Springfield, but the Park Service has been charged with using this as an opportunity to talk about how it relates to other similar events that were occurring across the country, again, with the hope of bringing people together.
Yeah, I think that's such a critical point that you began with, Chairwoman, that it's absolutely incumbent upon each and every one of us, and certainly our governments, to embrace the complexity of history. As the saying goes, without truth, there can be no reconciliation, no progress, no forward movement. So I was absolutely compelled by the priority that the Biden-Harris administration has given to presenting that complete, complex, and nuanced history of ours collectively. It's not any one person's history or one group's history. It's our collective history. Can you tell us a little bit about the detail of this particular monument? What sort of artifacts, if people visit, can they expect to see there?
Yeah, so right now, if you went, you would find yourself on a construction site that's associated with a project that's going on. But as part of the projects, the transportation projects that have been going on, they uncovered the charred remains of the houses that had been burned in 1908 and associated artifacts. So they've actually been able to kind of learn information about the people who lived in those houses and to kind of use that to understand what kind of community was really living here and what that history was. And so the plan is moving forward that the National Park Service, working with the Springfield community and other interested parties, are going to figure out what's the best way to really reflect these events and how they impacted that community. And so you'll be able to see not only the artifacts, which included, as I said, the charred portions of the house, but also things that showed that there was someone who was like a military veteran that lived in one of the houses. You know, there were different kinds of pottery that were, shards of those that remain that gave you a sense of the kind of socioeconomic level and things like that. So those things will be interpreted in ways and on an exhibit that will be able to give you a sense of what the life in that community was like before it was destroyed.
And certainly comes in line with, I think, an increasing awareness, especially amongst white Americans, of these race riots that were frankly endemic during this period of time. Many more people having familiar with the Tulsa race riots and these acts of violence targeting Black communities, Black leaders that happened throughout that period in our history. And this one, especially important, as you note, as it helped catalyze the creation of the National Association of Colored People, as we now call it the NAACP. So absolutely critical. This is the second monument or national park that the Biden administration has created under the Antiquities Act. The last one coming in 2023, also commemorating a particular moment in the civil rights movement that many of us are familiar with, that being the Emmett Till and Mamie Till Mobley National Monument. As one of the advisors and leaders within the Biden-Harris administration, and as a Black woman, if I can ask you, Chairwoman, what does this mean when we look at the priorities of this administration? And what message should Americans, and Black Americans especially, take from this as a priority of the administration?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm going to answer that question. I want to start, though, by this is actually our 11th use of the Antiquities Act. And so It is the second that is civil rights focused, right? And So if you look at our whole portfolio, you'll see more of a reflection of that telling the whole story, that some of the designations have been associated with areas that are really important to Native Americans, to tribal communities, to show tribal culture. Some have been related to areas that have an important, green space or recreational areas for nearby Latino communities. So it's really actually focused on trying to make sure that all of the country has some of the benefits of the both nature and an understanding and reflection of the history. As an African-American woman, I am just so honored to be in a position where I can be part of helping to identify, like, what are some of these places and how do we tell the story? How do we work with the communities to really understand what it is that they would like to see reflected in the work that we're doing? And so some of the best part of the work that I do is when we go out and we're actually talking to people about what this would mean to them. In this case, I was in Springfield when we did the public meeting and just heard from 400 people in a church hall who were able to kind of share why this was meaningful in not only their own lives, but also in they saw it as galvanizing the community together in ways that had not occurred before. And so, just a true honor to work for a president and a vice president who have prioritize this area of work and who are doing it differently because they know it matters for people to understand that they're part of history. Like the actual impact on individuals to realize that, my people also contributed to the greatness of this country.
Absolutely. My guest for this special segment, Council on Environmental Quality Chairwoman Brenda Mallory. Thanks again so much for being here. You mentioned this is the 11th use of the Antiquities Act by the Biden-Harris administration, the 8th addition to the national park system under the Biden-Harris administration. And you made special note, Chairwoman, of listening to community and engaging community. As these sorts of actions are undertaken by this administration, here the land that makes up this new addition to our national park system, this new monument, was donated. Can you tell us a little bit about the organizations, and in this case, a governmental jurisdiction that helped make this monument possible?
So the city of Springfield and the hospital, the St. John's Hospital, are the two contributors of the part of the property. And the St. John's Hospital in particular, that hospital was there when the riot occurred and was really instrumental in saving people's lives. Like, they did something that at the time probably was not normal, which is they were treating African-Americans and white folks who were harmed in the same hospital and actually helping to actually address the needs. So they have a part of this history. They also have an exhibit on the first floor of their lobby that actually goes through and shows the history and the importance of the event and some of the key players. So these are great community folks. And at the hearing, someone specifically said, you know, you're seeing the kind of the good part of Springfield come together. And during the riots, some of these people were the good part that helped try to get people through the harm.
So important to record, again, as you said, all of our history, all of the nuances, all of the complexity. My thanks to you, Chairwoman Brenda Mallory, Chairwoman of the Council on Environmental Quality under the Biden-Harris administration. Please keep up the good work. My thanks to you and all of your colleagues for the excellent work you're doing on behalf of the American people.
Thank you, Maggie. Thank you for covering this.
Absolutely. When we come back, folks, we're going to be joined by actor Sean Astin, who's stumping for Harris and will be in the state of Wisconsin. You're not going to want to miss that discussion up next. I'm Maggie Dawn. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. What's up, Wisconsin? Welcome back, everybody. Happy Friday, and boy, do I have a treat for all of you. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I have one of America's most beloved actors joining me. It's such a privilege and so much fun to have Sean Astin of Goonies, Rudy, Lord of the Rings, and Stranger Things fame joining me to talk about Kamala Harris's run for president. Welcome, Sean. Thanks so much for making time.
Maggie Dawn, it's good to be here.
Oh, so great to have you. You have been a busy, busy man. Just a few days ago, you dropped a Twitter post that said you were going to be stumping for Harris. You were starting out in Indiana. Tell us where you've been and why you took it upon yourself to make this effort.
I thank you so much for that. So I was actually in Chicago because instead of going home to LA, I decided to go to Chicago from London, and I made a doodle of the country as I was going. And I started tracing Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, just a little trace. And I was like, you know what? I want to go to all of them. I want to go to the campaign was like, we're ready for you for the big campaign push on, you know, as a surrogate, as a formal national surrogate for the campaign, on the weekend before the convention. And I was like, yes. Yeah, but I set aside this window of time, you know, a year ago. Well, because I knew that I wanted to be a part of this moment in history. And then, you know, as Kamala came into the nomination, now it's history in a way that is, you know, the kind I'm looking to the heavens and praying to my mom about that. Yes. We're going to, you know, my wife of 32 years and my three daughters, like the idea that we're going to finally have the first woman president in the United States of America is pretty makes it pretty exciting to me. But anyway, so that video that you just mentioned, it went, The most views I have ever had of any tweet ever was like 4 years ago, and it blew all the other tweets out of the water. It was a picture of me and my daughter when she was graduating from Harvard, and I put her Dean's award-winning master's thesis link in there, and that got 2 million views. And everywhere we went for a month, people were like, "Hey, congratulations! Hey," and you're like, "Wow, I guess Twitter's still working." This thing that I posted about wanting to campaign for Kamala Harris for president has now 10 million votes, 10 million views, 10 million views. The most I ever had, 2 million, 10 million views. So that was sort of the wind at my back. I went and stopped in offices in St. Joe County in Indiana. I went up, I went to Michigan and was in Grand Rapids. I went down to Ohio. I was in Toledo. I was in Cleveland. And then I bounced over to Pittsburgh. And each one of these places I'm going to, I was in Ohio. Then I went to Pennsylvania. I was in Erie, Pennsylvania. And then I was in Pittsburgh. And then, and now at the moment I'm calling you from Detroit. And then I'm going to go tonight and I'm going to fly, to Milwaukee. And I can't wait to be back in Milwaukee. But each one of these places I go to, I'm going to the campaign offices. And in some of them, there's a bunch of volunteers there. Actually, in Michigan, I went to a fair. It was called a volunteer fair and like a job fair, but for volunteers, yes. They local candidates and stuff. So sometimes I'm talking to volunteers, but a lot of times I would talk to kind of the organizing group, the organizing core, and like sit with 10, 15 people and talk about it was like a Tuesday or Wednesday. So they're gearing up for their weekend and stuff. And just telling them how much I appreciate them. Not like going into somebody else's state and telling them what they should do, but going into these places where people and I know we have the same philosophical approach and just letting them know that for what it's worth, you know, somebody's movies they like believes in them and wants to hear from them and wants them to know that they are supported. And that comes from a lifetime of participating in this sort of activity. And it just is, I've been in moments with campaigns where it was hard slogging, and this is just total enthusiasm. This is just, people are so excited and passionate. And so I've been basically surfing that good energy for the last week.
Hell yeah. I'm so happy to have you sharing some of your joy and passion for these issues with all of our listeners. I wanted to ask you a question about that, because you have been outspoken and politically active for your entire life. You've also been an acclaimed actor for your entire life. When you think about speaking out in this way, do you feel any risk? Because again, you have such broad appeal, Sean. People really, truly love your movies. Do you feel any risk to your career? Why do you feel so compelled to speak as you do and to take this huge amount of time out of your life to tell people basically thank you and keep fighting the fight?
Well, my mother is the reason. My mother was a labor union leader, and my father, you know, Patty Duke was my mom. John Astin is my dad. They're very famous for their TV shows in the 60s. And by the time I was kind of born and came into it, fame kind of as an idea, the fact that they were so recognizable and so many awards and everything else, that wasn't like that interesting to them anymore, in the sense that like they weren't focused on that. But what they did focus on was like a Coast Guard boat safety video, or the Jerry Lewis Labor Day Muscular Dystrophy Telethon, or mom as played Helen Keller. So vision and hearing impaired causes. So that this idea of like, and what you realize when you actually go around and you participate in causes or issues or whatever, is that, you know, you may be visible and that's really cool. But then after a minute or two, it's really about the people who are having that experience. And I know when I'm interacting with somebody in an airport or a restaurant or something like that, and they want an autograph or a picture, a selfie, whatever, you know, it's a really cool interaction. I've experienced it a lot. But what I'm really interested in is like, so where are you from? So what do you do for a living? So how are you, you know, what? And I think that's what's so meaningful about it, is that it's a way to kind of like pass the medicine ball of recognizability and being heard back to someone else. It's like the power that I have. And this is a Harvard study came out 2 days ago. At least I read it 2 days ago, that said that, you know, arts and entertainment people who use their voice in politics actually are having a greater impact than people might realize or like, but not in the bad way. They're actually having an impact in terms of civic engagement. So they're not necessarily, you know, going to come in here and tell you how you should feel about, you know, body autonomy or any of the other issues that are really important to me. But they're saying, look, your vote matters. You know, governing is done by those who show up, and you have a responsibility and an opportunity to like participate in the life of your neighbors. So in terms of like whether it's a threat or not, I have three daughters, and it's been really interesting to see how my advocacy and political, you know, like using my voice in a political space affects them. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, I think mostly the five of us, my wife and three daughters and me, have similar political views, but now they're all grown up. They're all adults now. So they all have their own political views. So I have to like be careful not to say on behalf of me and my family, because my kids are like, well, hold on, Dad. And they also, you know, if you get canceled, or if somebody does a meme or a deep fake or something like that, you know, it can really hurt them. It can hurt their relationships. It can hurt their standing with their environment. And so in essence, I'm kind of like, my actions are putting them in a position that I wouldn't necessarily want to, but it shouldn't be like that. It shouldn't be like that. You should be a democracy should be a peaceful way to exchange our ideas and agree or disagree, and then support who wins and keep moving, you know?
Thanks so much, Sean. As I like to say, the only thing that will save our democracy is democracy. Get out and vote, everybody. Look for Sean coming to your Harris headquarters to say thanks for your work, everybody. Thanks, Sean Astin, star of Goonies, Lord of the Rings. Welcome back, Wisconsin. I don't know about you all, but I need a breath. It's starting a Friday show off with a literal bang. What do you say, Brian? After that, no problem, right?
Yeah, I think we're good, guys. We did all our homework really early, and we're done. I think we're good.
And we're done.
Man, it was just great to listen to that kid. He's pretty good. Someday he'll grow up.
Oh, What an amazing man. And I do also want to tell Mr. Sean Astin, congratulations. In the break, he shared with us that he is, I think, 9 days away from finishing his master's degree in public administration. So our congratulations to Sean on that enormous accomplishment, and our thanks to him for the work that he is doing. Also thanks, of course, to Council on Environmental Quality Chair Brenda Mallory, who spoke about the Biden-Harris administration establishment of the Springfield 1908 Race Riot National Monument in Springfield, Illinois today, the 11th use by the Biden-Harris administration of the Antiquities Act, trying to, again, engage all of our communities to really embrace the full complexity of our history. What a way to start out our Friday show, TGIF. Folks, if you missed any of that, actor Sean Astin or Chairwoman Mallory, you can, of course, find episodes of The Maggie Dawn Show at civicmedia.us. In fact, if you miss any of our great work, that is where you find all of our past episodes. But Brian, wow, there continues to be quite a lot going on. And I wanted to take a breath because, in my opinion, I am really annoyed with the way that the media has been covering what can only be described as a slow motion mental breakdown of Donald Trump's. I mean, he's basically dissembling before our eyes. And I mean, even if you're a conservative, you're a big Trump fan and you're MAGA all the way, that's fine. It's not, but okay. Just go listen to any interview of Trump from 4 years ago, 10 years ago, and then listen to the guy that has been rambling on nearly incoherently over the last week. there is no question that the guy is suffering massive delusions. He can't follow a train of thought. And everybody in the media, in my opinion, I mean, I was listening to MSNBC, CNN, a little Fox this morning. They keep talking about it as if it's a bad campaign. Oh, this is bad campaigning. It's not a bad campaign. It's a bad brain. The man has a bad brain. If the GOP wants to, you know, throw slings and arrows at the media for not more fulsomely covering what they claim was Biden's, you know, cognitive decline, why the hell isn't that happening here, especially from so-called liberal outlets? Again, this isn't a bad campaign. It's a bad brain. His gray matter is not functioning properly. And he was already
cognitively there.
Yeah, that's not normal things for people to talk about. And the evidence of this is just all over the place. One of the best terms I heard used to describe this, two of them, delusional and digressive, meaning the guy is just a walking tangent, a digression, if you will. There's no following of script or following of the bouncing ball. I mean, it's ridiculous.
I mean, talking to me is dizzying sometimes, but at least I do have a train of thought that I can follow my way back, and I know what I'm somewhat doing sometimes. Did you know that the other day?
Right. That's why. Listen, Brian, you had a wonderful show, Dueling Tangents. That was the brand, right? This guy is running for president. You and I are just having a little political talk on the radio. You would expect a guy running for president to be able to stay somewhat on message. And I think the question has to be asked, what the hell is wrong with him? Well, because it's seriously concerning, as he is the Republican candidate for president.
Yeah, but I think you're conflating what their message actually is. We all want it to be like, what is your message on policy? What is your message on the environment? But really, their message is the Democrats suck and screw you, the media. You're jerks. That's the message. That's it. So as long as he's saying anything to the effect of Democrats are jerks and the media are jerks, that's the message. And he's on message as far as they're concerned.
Yeah, but even if that were the standard, Brian, which it is not by any measure for a legitimate presidential campaign, you just can't go like, I'm rubber, you're glue, whatever you say bounces off me and sticks to you. Like, that's for playgrounds, not presidents. The problem is, even if that was a salient message, he can't deliver it saliently. It's still an incredibly digressive, random array of tangents and half thoughts that bounce around like, you know, I don't know, an air popcorn machine. It just isn't reflective of a man that's in control of his faculties. I wouldn't be saying this if his attack lines on Kamala Harris and Democrats were cogent, on point, and consistent. The point of the matter is, whatever you think their message is or should be, there isn't one. It's just random nonsense. And shall we take a little bit of a listen? Because this week, if you thought the last 3 weeks were bad for Donald Trump, the past week has been even worse. They even trotted out props to help the guy stay on message yesterday. He was speaking, and they in North Carolina, was this North Carolina yesterday?
Or
at one of his clubs?
Bedminster.
Yeah, so Bedminster yesterday, North Carolina, the day before. In Bedminster, they had put groceries on the stage as almost like, well, if we show him what he should actually be talking about, perhaps this visual cue will help the guy stay on track. And it simply didn't. But let's start.
Nothing says awesome like bringing a bunch of groceries to a place where people don't buy groceries go.
Yeah, like at a country club. Apparently they didn't understand that was a little bit cognitively dissonant.
No, this is what the people buy.
Yes, at country clubs. They buy groceries. No, of course they don't. But let's start in North Carolina. Because, again, the discussion in North Carolina was supposed to be about the economy. It was supposed to be a serious discussion about economic policy. But the old Trumpster couldn't quite keep the thread. Let's take a listen.
Now, this is a little bit different day because this isn't around. This is what we're talking about. A thing called the economy. They wanted to do a speech on the economy. A lot of people are very devastated by what's happened with inflation and all of the other things. So we're doing this as a intellectual speech. You're all intellectuals today. Today we're doing it, and we're doing it right now. And it's very important. They say it's the most important subject. I think crime is right there. I think the border is right there for, personally. We have a lot of important subjects because our country has become a third world nation. We literally are a third world nation. We're a banana republic in so many ways, and we're not going to let that happen because we're starting a free fall. Today we're going to talk about one subject, and then we'll start going back to the other because we sort of love that, don't we? But it's an important, no, it's an important, they say it's the most important subject. I'm not sure it is, but they say it's the most important. Sort inflation is the most important, but that's part of economy.
I dress myself.
I mean, for real. And we're talking about it right now. Well, at least he has mastered the concept of time. I mean, what? And inflation, it's part of economy. Like, the actual correct phraseology would be, a discussion of inflation is part of an economic policy or a discussion of economics. Like, the syntax is even screwed up.
He never had a middle school teacher say, Mr. Trump, did you read the book? Because that sounded like a kid trying to give a report on something he never read.
That's a perfect analogy, Brian. That is what it's like if you ever were the kid in, like, middle school, caught unprepared for your book report, perhaps a sixth grade book report on where the red fern grows, a frequently read book in sixth grade, and you get up, well, it's about a fern and where it grows in a place with trees and a dog, and that's
now that
and
I
they
think
do
about
that
it,
for a while.
Trump has stolen my bit. This is how I got into acting in the first place. So I couldn't do I couldn't play sports. I moved from New Hampshire to Michigan. Doesn't matter. I was in English class and I wouldn't read the book sometimes. But when I would make up answers, like make up just funny, completely wrong answers, and we'd have to correct each other's quizzes. People tried to sit next to me on purpose, knowing that I wouldn't read the book because it would be entertaining, and they would read it to the class. The whole class thought it was entertaining, and rather than go and tell me that I'm an idiot for not reading it, the teacher said, hey, get into acting. But my point is, Donald Trump stole my bit, and he keeps stealing my bit.
His bit, yes. Everyone out there, conservatives included, the next time you hear Donald Trump talking, think of fancy Brian Kelly in middle school, not reading the book, not reading the assignment, and, you know, baloneying his way through a quiz or a book report, because that's what we've got. We've got middle school brain who hasn't done his homework and can't quite stay on topic. Again, this isn't a bad campaign. It's a bad brain. A bad brain then coupled with, like, pathological and dangerous levels of narcissism, you know, with the nuclear football. I'm sure it'll all sort out. We don't need to stop in North Carolina. Let's take a listen to Trump yesterday comparing Kamala Harris to Nicolas Maduro, who is a dictator and has basically overthrown his country's government. Let's take a listen.
She's running on the Maduro plan. We call it the Maduro plan, like something straight out of Venezuela or the Soviet Union. This announcement is an admission that her economic policies have totally failed and caused really a catastrophe for our country, and beyond that, a catastrophe in the world.
Venezuela is where he's running after he loses, by the way. He said that.
Right. And just in case you haven't been staying up on the international affairs, Venezuela just had an election about 3 weeks ago. By all reports and according to publication posting of some of the official ballot tally, the totals, Maduro lost by a landslide. People are rioting in Venezuela. Nicolas Maduro is executing his political enemies. Does this sound familiar to anyone? The analogy, Mr. Trump, is not Kamala Maduro. It's you and Maduro. You're the one who has threatened to weaponize the DOJ to go after your political enemies, have talked about people who disagree with you as if they've committed treason for disagreeing with you on policy bases. You're the one who incited an insurrectionist violent uprising that disrupted the peaceful trance of power. You're Maduro. Again, perhaps it's, again, the kid who hasn't done his homework and a huge amount of psychological, what would we call it, projection, right? That's what you hear from conservatives. It got worse. Then Trump started talking about Miriam Adelson. She is the widow of a major, major GOP donor. Check this weirdness out. And folks, if you've served in the military, listen closely to what Donald Trump has to say about the highest honor that can be bestowed by the U.S. government. Listen closely to this, folks.
We gave Miriam the Presidential Medal of Freedom. That's the highest award you can get as a civilian. It's the equivalent of the Congressional Medal of Honor, but civilian version. It's actually much better because everyone gets the Congressional Medal of Honor. That's soldiers. They're either in very bad shape because they've been hit so many times by bullets, or they're dead. She gets it, and she's a healthy, beautiful woman. It's right. And they're rated equal.
That is appalling. Appalling. It's so bad, we'll have to take a listen to it again when we come back. We'll go to the phones. I want to hear from you. What do you think the most crackpot thing that Donald Trump has said lately is? There's so many to choose from. I'm Maggie Dawn. He's Brian Kelly. He did his homework today. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go anywhere. We'll take your calls and texts next. 855-75-CIVIC. 855-752-4842.
The family gathers around and reads it, and then someone screams out, "She's laughing up at us from hell." It's me, I am the problem. It's me, I am the problem. It's me.
And he said, "No way." And I said, "Way."
The exact exchange and nuance of phrase in this ritual is very important.
Because I'm cognitively there.
We clawed, we chained our hearts in vain. We jumped, never asking why. We kissed, I fell under your spell of love no one could deny. Don't you?
I'm not under anybody's spell. I hope you're not either. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody, and happy Friday. We've been just chatting a wee bit about some of the craziness that's coming out of Donald Trump's mouth. Again, this isn't bad campaigning. It's about his bad brain. Unprepared, uninterested, incapable of mastering any level of detail or staying on message. Digressive in the extreme. Cruel. I could go on. And just otherwise full of nonsense, basically. And let's keep in mind, the first time through with Donald Trump, he was still picking from the GOP A-team. You know what I'm saying? Like, people were willing to come work in his administration. No one that gives a whit about their actual reputation would agree to work for this guy again. So what you're talking about are people that aren't experts, not the top of their field, not the creme de la creme of brilliant conservative thinking. What you're talking about is Donald Trump picking 4,000 people in his administration that are sycophant, you know, will go whichever way the Trump wind blows, people like J.D. Vance and Stephen Miller. You know, that's the scary part. And at the helm of this crazy circus will be this guy. I mean, it's just frightening. And it's so, so disrespectful. Yesterday, and I don't know why the media isn't all over what he said about people that win the Congressional Medal of Honor. Again, it's the highest honor that can be bestowed by the American government. And he just crapped all over it.
But she's and a donor.
Yeah. But gave the Medal of Freedom to someone just because they can write big checks, right? Are wealthy and write big checks. And said, you know, that the Medal of Honor doesn't matter because it's given to people who have been wounded or killed in combat. let's take a listen again. It's critical because it is so disrespectful. One more time for the record.
We gave Miriam the Presidential Medal of Freedom. That's the highest award you can get as a civilian. It's the equivalent of the Congressional Medal of Honor, but civilian version. It's actually much better because everyone gets the Congressional Medal of Honor. That's soldiers. They're either in very bad shape because they've been hit so many times by bullets, or they're dead. She gets it, and she's a healthy, beautiful woman. It's right. And they're rated equal.
Just said out loud that it's better to be a rich billionaire's widow that can write big campaign checks than someone who served in our military and was wounded or killed in battle. That's what the man running for president just said. If you're a conservative and that's a defensible viewpoint, I'd like to hear from you. How do you defend that? It's disgusting. And it's also nuts. I'm going to save the, we found a little montage of Donald Trump talking about Hannibal Lecter. We're going to save that for after top of the hour because it's so, so good. And but we'll talk important. A little bit about that.
Yeah. Very important historical figure.
Very important historical figure, that Hannibal Lecter. We're going to save that for after top of the hour. But I wanted to take a couple of your texts, Carol from Madison, pointing out how lame Trump and Vance are based on their allies, including people like Hulk Hogan ripping his shirt open, Kid Rock, Dana White, and the like.
If you think Sherry by the way, Hulk Hogan has his own vape. I was in the smoke shop the other day, God. And they had like the yellow, all yellow with red lightning, Hulkamaniac 8,000 puffs vape. So it's not, let's just say his endorsement is not much beyond, oh, they paid me.
Yeah. We got that. Sherry from Horicon saying, yeah, that's the MAGA problem. The bad brains. Matt from Richland Center. Hey, if the guy has to utter the phrase, I am a stable genius, you are definitely not a stable genius. Wes from Middleton pointing out that Trump really needs to apply some fresh fixative to those dentures. Couldn't agree with it. Does sound like his fake teeth are shifting around. Little mush mouth there from Donald Trump. And a texter from 414 saying former President Fruit Loops is now the squirrel used to distract attention from Project 2025. Yeah, he's trying to distance himself from that, but there is no daylight. That's what he wants, an administration full of sycophants and loyalists who will do whatever the emperor with no clothes, the bad brain Trump has to say. We'll also talk a little bit about his statements yesterday about his attacks, his personal attacks on Kamala Harris, because, again, if it wasn't offensive enough for him to basically denigrate Medal of Honor recipients, the highest award that the American government can bestow on a person. If that's not bad enough, you know, let's just double down on a bunch of racism. And yeah, that's the GOP candidate for president. We'll listen to some of that sound coming yesterday from Bedminster, as well as a most excellent, if I can echo some of the president's superlatives, a most excellent montage of the weird stuff that Donald Trump has to say about Hannibal Lecter. Some of you have had theories about what that all is about. I want to know after we come back from break, what the heck do you think the Hannibal Lecter nonsense is about? Maybe Donald Trump doesn't understand what it means to request asylum when you immigrate. I don't know. We'll talk all about it. I'm Maggie Dawn. He's Brian Kelly. Keep it locked. Then I'm going to tell you about Kamala Harris's major policy announcements coming today. Big economic policy announcements all after the top of the hour. News, weather, and sports is up next. I'm Maggie Dawn. Keep it locked. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
I just walked away. I will always want you. I came in like a wrecking ball.
you know what I do? There was a shark, or you get electrocuted. I'll take electrocution every single time.
It's our time.